Welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast, where we share all kinds of tips, advice, and interview guests on all things innovation and leadership in modern marketing. Each episode is a conversation with inspiring people who make wonderful contributions to our knowledge in these areas and spark curiosity and ideas to pursue. Join me, Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and let's get into today's masterclass on this InnovaBuzz podcast.
You will find your audience. And I say this to podcasters a lot and creators in general, is like, someone, if you're doing it well, someone will care about what you're doing. Someone will want to hear the words that you're saying. Does that mean that somebody out there isn't saying something different or similar and people are listening to them? No, but I think that sharing what is important to you and doing the best job of it will find the people that is the bigger differentiator too.
Hi there, innovator. It's great to be back with another episode. I hope you've had an awesome week so far. And I hope that you enjoyed my recent conversations with George Bryant of GB Masterminds and with Corey Wassell of Verse Wealth. I'm really excited today to have on the InnovaBuzz podcast as my guest, Brad Smith of Simplecast. Brad is an entrepreneur and he describes himself as a professional daydreamer. He's the founder and CEO of Audios Ventures, the home of Simplecast, a podcasting platform empowering audio creators with the tools they need to share their stories, evolve their craft, and connect with a world of listeners. A quick promotional message from our sponsor, that's my business, InnovaBiz, where we help coaches and consultants build their professional credibility, engage their target audience, and connect with their ideal clients. To help you get more clarity about who your ideal client is and how you can build a strong, enduring relationship with them, have a look at our Marketing Master mini class. It will give you that ideal client clarity and you'll learn how to communicate with them to build that engaging, enduring relationship. You can even use the exercise to define an ideal audience if you're thinking about a podcast, a speech, or a presentation. Access the Marketing Master mini class at innovabiz.co/marketingmaster. It is completely free and it's accessible without even giving away your email. In our discussion today, Brad talked to me about the importance of standards when measuring anything and the IAB proposed standards for podcast plays. We explored what is really important when it comes to podcast metrics and the insights that you can get to drive improvement of your podcast. And we talked about some of the exciting things happening in podcasting, from corporate internal podcasts to dynamic content driven by listener behavior and much more. Lots of really exciting stuff here, and a lot of the things that Brad talked about in relation to podcasting, there are lessons there for any kind of content creation. Without further ado then, let's fly into the hive and get the buzz from Brad Smith. Hi, I'm your host Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm really excited to welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast today from New York City, Brad Smith, who's the CEO of Simplecast, a podcast hosting platform. He's also a serial entrepreneur and a self-described professional daydreamer. So looking forward to finding out more about that. Welcome to the podcast, Brad. It's a great privilege to have you as my guest.
Thank you, Jürgen. It's wonderful to be here.
Now, Zach Marino of Squadcast, who was our guest on episode 184 of InnovaBuzz podcast, suggested that we have a conversation with you, Brad. So big hello to Zach.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Zach.
Now, you've dedicated your career to supporting creators in all forms. So you've founded the content incubator Wayward Wild. You're a publisher of the Great Discontent magazine, and I think there's a podcast that goes with that as well. And You're also founder of the Verb DIY website builder that was had creatives in mind. So I'm really looking forward to digging in deeper to all things creating and podcasting, particularly with Simplecast. But tell us, first of all, what is a professional daydreamer?
I think, for me, a professional daydreamer is kind of part of what it means to be an entrepreneur and what it means to come up with ideas and to build something from scratch of, you know, I think what we do every single day when we get out of bed and we, you know, just like everybody else, we kind of have to go by the seat of our pants and make things up and daydream about what we want to build and what we want our companies to be. So, I don't know. I just kind of always felt myself a little bit of, I definitely love being an entrepreneur and I love building companies, but, I think that minute that we as creatives kind of lose our ability to daydream, we lose a lot of our, you know, vision and our focus and what drives us.
Yeah. Oh, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah. So, what do you do today and why?
Today specifically or?
Well, now, at this point in time.
Yeah, so currently my only project, which consumes about 100 hours of my week, is, is, you know, building the Simplecast product, growing this team, growing this company, and kind of all things that involves.
Okay. And so that's supporting podcasters.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Hmm. Just creating tools, creating software, creating a platform that creatives can use to kind of help them solve problems and to get content out in the world.
Hmm. How did you get into podcasting?
So actually was made a few episodes and was on my first podcast in 2005. So 14 years ago. Very much loved the medium at that time. It was very exciting. I mean, to go back to kind of that point, right around the time to which Apple started, you know, indexing RSS feeds within the iTunes platform, and, you know, plugging your iPod in to sync and having to download the MP3s from your Mac to a iPod with a spinning hard drive in it, and then you would take it with you, and then you had your radio shows on the go. And there was something incredible about that because we were experiencing kind of the explosion of blogging across the internet, and which really, I think, lit a fire of what the internet could do for communication and for expressing yourself. And podcasting was just incredible. The fact that I could create an audio file and put it into a directory, and hours later, somebody halfway around the world could sync that to an MP3 player and then leave their house and listen to ideas, interviews, learn from people. It felt like this, it felt like the future.
Yeah.
So my first pass with podcasting was in late 2005. And then, through, not to skip too far ahead, but then through my content incubator, which I did prior to, which we'll talk about in a bit, maybe, prior to Simplecast, I was working with a brand called The Great Discontent, and it was a digital magazine that basically told the story of the life of creators. Like, what does it mean to be creative? What does it mean to be an artist? And it was an interview series, and we launched a podcast, which was actually live. It was recorded in front of an audience at a hotel here in New York, and started working on that podcast, and then realized that, okay, 2005 was the last time I had anything to do with creating a podcast. The year right then was 2016, which meant 11 years had passed, and I still felt like it's still stuck in the dark ages. There is still MP3 files and there is still an RSS feed. And the success of a podcast is still measured in a download. Mm. And what is a download and what constitutes enough downloaded? So it really got my software brain spinning again. And, you know, I had taken a break from kind of building tech products for the web. And it was that time that kind of got me ready to jump back into the software development world and build something for podcasters.
That's an interesting story. And there's so much to explore there. I remember I did a presentation recently about podcasting and, helping entrepreneurs that were new to it getting started with podcasting. And I did talk about the history of podcasting a little bit. And a lot of the people in the audience there had no idea what an MP3 player is. I've still got my little iPod that I listened to way back in the early days. And I said, now this is what we used to use to listen to
podcasts. It was not connected to the internet.
That's right.
Whatsoever.
Yeah. It was kind of completely self-contained. You had to plug it into a computer and sync it to a thing called iTunes, which you may not even know about today either. I remember.
It pretty much goes away in a few more weeks.
I remember in those early 2000s, I was listening to lots of podcasts, but I couldn't actually imagine myself doing it because it all seemed fairly complex to me at the time. Mm-hmm. And then here we are. what about... 15, 18 years later, actually doing it. Yeah. So one of the things you mentioned was doing a live podcast in those early days. What are some of the challenges doing a podcast live, as in front of a live audience and with people in the same studio?
Everything is challenging. There were nights that we would do these tapings to where we would have, redundant or even tertiary recordings happening because, there is no going back and doing that all over again. So definitely timing, the technicals behind it. We won't even think about, how we needed to mic it up and then make sure that you're not getting a lot of noise from the audience. But, I think one thing that's the hardest is everybody thinks podcasting just means buying a microphone and plugging it into your computer and having something interesting to say. But, a lot of the best content out there is so many hundreds of hours of work that goes into planning the content, planning the strategy, not just going into an interview, but actually having questions, sharing those with the person you're going to be interviewing prior. So the trick with doing it live was not just the work of, tailoring the questions and doing the research on like the people that you're going to be interviewing, but the hardest thing, which we kind of stumbled on for the first few episodes, was it's so easy to illustrate things or use body language when you're sitting in front of an audience. But, for me, I was part of helping to host probably the first six of these, and it was very difficult to have to remember that, the audience is secondary and that thousands of people are going to be listening to this, but only 100 people are seeing it live. So, it really causes you to have to almost turn that off and think about the audience that you're speaking to in mass versus the live audience. But it was also exciting and there is a certain energy to it. When you and I are having a conversation, if a room began laughing or a room clapped or something like that, there certainly is an energy that is derived from that, that would help, move the show along. It was difficult, but it was also extremely fun.
Yeah. Yeah. I imagine that, you made a really good point there. I thought that's important for all podcasters to remember, and that's keeping the listener in mind and that you're speaking to the listener. And I guess if you're in front of a live audience, one of the things that might help is explaining that up front to that live audience that, they're there to help make the show, but really because you're recording for podcast, it's the podcast audience that you're speaking to.
Yeah. Yeah, and it was editing was tough at times because we would have, well-known photographers or a famous artist or somebody come in and, we had a large movie screen behind us. It was in a movie theater in a hotel. So, there were times that we wanted to actually showcase the work or let a photographer walk us through a series of work that they did and what it meant to them. So we had to be very careful in planning that out because we would remove that actually from the podcast version because you don't want to listen to a photographer spend a 5 or 10 minutes telling a story about photos when you can't see the photos.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So it took a lot of extra planning to be able to kind of orchestrate the what is beneficial for the live audience, but what is also going to have, you know, the podcast listening audience rolling their eyes because they don't want to hear you talk about something that has a visual aspect that they can't see.
Fascinating. All right. Now, you mentioned that kind of you got back into podcasting and you decided you needed a technological solution. What were some of the gaps that you saw and that Simplecast is addressing?
I mean, the biggest gap at that point, I mean, you know, this was mid-2016, so a little over 3 years ago, was it's interesting to see just how far the industry has changed, how much it's growing, how many more companies and venture dollars and everything's entering the space. But, you know, even 3 years ago, there weren't a lot of very easy to use, intuitive, beautiful tools to use for publishing. And that's really where we started. But kind of a big vision for the company from the very beginning was I feel and felt at that time that we wanted to really invest in data and analytics and figure out, you know, how do we move past the download as a statement of measure? How do we, you know, begin to gather data that we've been unable to have around audio? How are people listening? Where is drop-offs? How can we use machine learning to do a lot of very unique things? Because podcasting being an open medium and being RSS is one of the things that makes it beautiful. There is a no permission world to create an MP3 and distribute it around the globe to all these devices. But at the same time, because it is an open ecosystem, you know, you have a delivery mechanism and then you have a hosting mechanism. So distribution to a device, because one platform does not control both those, they don't control the origin and the delivery, it makes gathering data and gathering insights into how people are listening to your show much, much more difficult. So we definitely set off on a road to build easier, more intuitive publishing tools, giving creators as many tools as they needed, the right tools we felt to really get their product launched. And then we shifted very much into focusing on data and analytics. And that's really the last year and a half of our company, what we've really been digging into.
Yeah, you mentioned earlier about downloads and what is a download and what constitutes a download. That's a question that I've always wondered about. And, you know, I get asked quite a lot by guests and other people that are interested in the podcast, how many downloads do you have? And my answer usually is, well, that depends on where you look. And yep. I'm not really sure what that actually means. So can you explain to us a little bit more? What's your take on that? What is a download? And, you know, how does that relate actually to the number of listeners that you have?
Yeah, there's two big questions in life, and one is what is the meaning of life, and then the other is what is a download. Once we solve those two, like we've figured out everything else. So I'll kind of start big picture, and then we can maybe get into some technicals about, you know, how we tried to go a little bit deeper in the download. So anybody that has heard of, you know, the IAB, you know, is familiar with IAB compliancy or IAB certification. The IAB kind of measures a lot across the advertising industry, and the IAB and a lot of podcasting platforms like us have been working with the IAB closely over the past couple of years to adhere to their standards and to measure our downloads in a certain way. So for instance, we have been going through IAB's new certification program, which means IAB has had a document for the past few years that they recommend a podcast platform like Simplecast to use. Here is what a byte range request needs to look like. You should not preload on players. This is how much data needs to be transferred to constitute a play or a start of a play. So there's a lot of standards, but IAB quickly realized that it's a rule book, but there is no governance to that rule book. So what they did late last year was they rolled out their certification program. And a lot of companies have been going through this. A large handful of companies have already achieved certification. Certification basically means the IAB Tech Lab brings in an outside auditing firm, a third party. They don't do it themselves. And that third party for us specifically, would they went through our code. They went through kind of how we build our analytics platform, how we ingest our analytics, how we report our analytics, and kind of all the methodology around that. And the idea there is to basically create a standard to where on one platform, what you say is a download is the same on another platform. And it's like, imagine a world if every country had their own, you know, if a meter was a different length in every country. Well, yeah, so it's 1 meter here and it's also 1 meter in Australia, but you know, your meter is, you know, twice as long as ours is. Yeah. And that's the problem that we've run into with no system of record or no standard to measure by is, you know, nobody has basically said, well, let's actually try to build a system of record, basically a standardization. So, you know, we have spent the better part of this year working very closely with this auditing firm and the IAB Tech Lab to achieve certification. Do we 100% agree with everything around IAB and, you know, what constitutes every little detail of the platform? No. But we feel it's important to be a part of this because we think that there needs to be a standardization, that we think that by improving data and improving data integrity will bring more trust into the world of podcasting. More trust in the world of podcasting means advertisers become more interested. More interested advertisers means more dollars flowing into it. More dollars flowing into it means the industry is growing and creators are making money. So when, you know, platforms say like, hey, we're sorry that your numbers are going to drop when we achieve IAB certification, like, it's something for us that, you know, we did with a lot of forethought and pain and tried to communicate to our creators that like these drops are a good thing despite they sting. But you also need to realize that eventually every podcaster out there will feel these same stings and these same drops. You know, you as the independent podcaster that gets 4,000 downloads a month or 40,000 downloads a month or 400,000 downloads a month, the things that you go through to be part of a platform that has moved into the IAB, you know, certification process, eventually every podcast will go through that. The top 20 in Apple will go through that. Like they will kind of see, you know, the saying of, you know, rising tides, you know, will lift all ships. Well, you know, tides that are going out will bring all ships down at the same time. So it's a lot of creators can be quick to go like, well, we're being penalized because of IAB, but I think we need to look at it as big picture. Yeah, that Band-Aid really stings to tear off, but it's actually going to help this industry going forward. So that's kind of the standardization and helping the industry ensure that, you know, we're using the same meter stick that everybody else is. And our meter sticks are all the same size. But one thing that we've really tried to do with our analytics platform is go even deeper. You know, we have a lot of methodology and a patent pending way that we actually gather data around what is a listen. We have a metric on our platform that talks about unique listeners, meaning it doesn't even take into account downloads, that we report back to creators how many unique devices are actually touching their show within a given, you know, preset of time that they can run the report on. So we think that the download has been a great system of measurement, but we think there is so much more. We believe that attribution to actually knowing, are people listening to your ads, are people following that click or following that link that you tell them to go to? How many people are finishing your show that start your show? We launched web player analytics a few weeks ago. And in doing so, we wrote a blog post about it and published it. And I actually reached out to a few shows on our platform and said, hey, can we use an anonymous version of, or an anonymized version of screenshot of your web player analytics? Because web player analytics, they show where your audience is leaving. They show where people are skipping ahead. And we have a somewhat popular creator on our platform that said, sure, just make sure our name's not on it so people don't know it's us. And I can send you this after the show, but it was so insightful that with this data, we could actually see that about 20% of their listening audience was skipping ahead 5 to 7 minutes to start listening. Because what had happened is that audience grew accustomed to, well, there's going to be opening music, and then there's going to be that same ad, and then there's going to be that same monologue. They knew, their audience knew, 7 minutes-ish is when they really get in with the host or get in with the guest.
With the new content.
And I think, like, we think as a company, like, data and analytics are not just about having a number to give to advertisers. We believe that content can be made better through data, that you can better understand how people are listening to your show. We have another metric that actually gives you data back on the speed at which people are listening. And it's interesting because a lot of times, you know, we will show this to large companies or enterprises that are using our platform. And they'll go, why does that matter? And my thinking is, hey, if 30% of your audience is listening at half speed, there could be some very good insights in there that your host could talk way too fast. So data is important for monetization. Data is important for a show being successful and generating revenue from it. But I think it is just important of how data can help us create better content and better shows. We have one show on our platform. It's a daily show. It's about 5 minutes long. The data, we also have another metric that lets creators see where people are when they're listening. Are they at work? Are they at home? Are they on cellular? Or, I mean, are they on an airplane? You know, we can actually filter out the Wi-Fi providers on an airplane. You can know if somebody downloaded your show while they're on a flight. But we noticed with this show that they had almost 50% of their listens were coming from a place of business between the hours of like 11 and 2 on the East Coast, which tells me that that creator had no insight into this before, but a lot of their audience is at work and they're probably listening on a break or their lunch break. And that's because it's a short, bite-sized show. It's only 5 minutes long. I could not listen to Dax Shepard's Armchair Expert while I'm at work because the show runs almost the length of the workday. But, you know, a five-minute show I can quickly consume at work. So this creator was so shocked by this. And they're like, I can speak to my audience in a different way because I know that half of them are at work. And they're listening probably during a break or their lunch hour. So again, data can really drive better content. Data, we believe, can drive better understanding into who your audience is and where you're meeting them.
Yeah, that's great information. And you know, to me, data, really the value of data is in the insights that you can get from it and what it can help you do with your content. And also, you know, that last point you made there about better understanding your audience, which I think is is a key to having that interaction, because at the end of the day, when you're on a podcast and speaking to the audience, it's that interaction and that relationship with the audience that really is critical.
Absolutely.
One of the things I always wondered, and I'm fascinated, you know, that you've got the ability to track web plays and dig into that some more. I always wondered, you know, this traditional download metric, I mean, what is a download in terms of if I have a podcast on my phone, I'm subscribed to the podcast, and so every new episode comes up in the feed, and if I want to listen to it, it actually downloads to the phone. But if I listen to it on my computer, then it's not really downloading, is it? It's streaming from the host. And so does that count as a download?
So we are in the process of preparing to release a new metric that is actually going to split the download. We're going to refer to them as plays, but we're going to split them into downloads and streams. Because more and more, a lot of apps are moving to streaming, not downloading. Downloading needs to be like music. Hey, I want to have this song on a flight with me, so I'm going to download it offline on my phone. I don't download every song I've ever played through Apple Music or through Spotify. Why should podcasts be auto-downloaded? Mm. So what we are actually doing is we're going to be separating those out into like, well, this was a download and it could have been listened to, but the reason we don't like auto-downloading is once that MP3 goes onto that device, it's a black box.
Yeah.
You can, like,
you don't know
using technology.
Yeah.
Right. And sure, there's ways around that, but then you're talking about, you know, violating basically every privacy law out there and Apple's terms of service. So for creators, like, it's better that apps stream. So we actually have been running some internal reports for our customers to where they're curious about how much of our audience of, say, our newest episodes in the last month, how many are downloads versus how many are streams. And what's very interesting is we ran this data a few weeks ago, comparing it back to similar data a year ago, and the number of downloads has decreased substantially and the number of streams has increased. So what's very interesting to us is what we're going to do is we're going to allow creators to be able to separate a download versus a stream. And the way our analytics platform works, we derive a lot of our data by studying the MP3 at the surface level. We can see a device touch an MP3. We can, through machine learning, figure out that somebody skipped ahead because we didn't see that device touch this MP3 again in the same byte range requests. So there's a lot of data that we can make very strong assumptions on when an MP3 is being streamed. Did this person complete the episode? Did they only get halfway through? Did they skip? So to us, the data that we and our platform can kind of extract from a streamed MP3 is 10 times more greater than a downloaded MP3. Hmm. So what we'll do is we'll actually surface this data, and then we will form a kind of a data set around the stream data and report to the creators kind of some assumptions about how much of your audience is listening to your entire show in Overcast or in Breaker or in Apple Podcasts or even Spotify. So we're pretty excited about, one, seeing more apps shift to streaming instead of auto-downloading. Definitely the download is necessary, but it shouldn't be automatic. Streaming definitely gives us more data back because we can study how that individual device interacts with that MP3 throughout a stream.
Yeah, that's fascinating stuff. I've wondered, and I haven't looked into this, but you probably know the answer. I've wondered, with Spotify putting so much more effort into podcasting and the ability now to go onto Spotify and track some data around listens on Spotify, whether that's automatically streamed when you listen to a podcast on Spotify.
Yes, Spotify, for the most part, is streaming everything. And we can see that now. So we have worked closely with Spotify, just to maybe give a little bit of background. And I posted a blog post on this about a week ago, which I can share with you if it's helpful afterwards. But Spotify is kind of one of the platforms out there that they don't actually stream the data from the host. So if you were to, say, listen to Armchair Expert on Apple Podcasts, when you click play, that audio file is streaming from us. And because of that, it's streaming from us. We can monitor that and we can measure the MP3. We can give you a lot of great data back. Spotify hasn't worked that way. Spotify is kind of the one platform that when they see a new MP3 in your feed, they download it into their ecosystem.
Okay.
And then Spotify streams it to you. And a lot of that's done for, you know, quality control and consistency's sake. Like, think if, you know, you have a host that, you know, maybe is a small company and it's four people and they have downtime. If somebody clicks play on your show on Apple Podcasts during that downtime, your MP3 won't play. Your listeners around the world will get dead silence. So I get in a lot of ways why Spotify did this, because it ensures that their infrastructure can stream the MP3. The downside is that for creators, it's been an utter black box. Spotify does give some data in their dashboard, But a lot of people on our platform have come to be very, they've come to be akin and very used to the level of deep data that we give back around a show. Mm. And, you know, they're like, well, why can't we get that on Spotify? Why do we have no Spotify data in our Simplecast analytics, despite there's Apple and Overcast and Google and Stitcher? Where's Spotify? And that's because when Spotify streams the audio, there's no way we can get data out. Mm. It's a black box.
It's not interacting.
And Spotify has been really, really great to work with. So we just announced this last week. Spotify has actually given us, they've granted us something called pass-through, which means for podcasts on the Simplecast platform, when someone clicks play in Spotify, that data does now stream directly from us. So when we worked with Spotify to flip that switch, it now gives very detailed granular data back about how people are listening in Spotify on our platform, just like our customers get from Apple or Google or anything else. So it's been really great to work with them on that. And we're pretty excited for the data that's going to unlock for a lot of creators. Hmm. So, you know, when I was saying, like, you know, studying the speed at which people are listening or where they're dropping off, or are they skipping 7 minutes into your show? We were able to give creators that data on most listening platforms, except for Spotify. And now we're able to also give that data for Spotify.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great. Because I wondered about Spotify, obviously their music thing is all streamed from their own service. So I thought, well, I wonder if they're doing the same with podcasting. So
yeah, podcast is the same. And of course, you know, they are still very young in podcasting, much like a lot of companies. And it's something that they are improving day after day and building. They're putting a lot of resources and a lot of thought into making their podcast platform, you know, better, because they have been a music streaming service from the very beginning. Mm. And, you know, podcasts don't work like music, and they know that, and they're working to improve it.
Yeah, yeah. It's fascinating, though, to see that they're putting so much effort into podcasting. Obviously, they're banking on the future of the podcasting industry. And I wonder, you know, what's your take on where podcasting is headed as an industry?
Well, I think this whole internet thing is a fad, and it's going to go away in the next couple of years anyway. So we're just going to go back to paper. This internet thing's never going to work. Yeah. I'm kidding, by the way. Just I know there's people out there that actually believe that. So I'm going to state that I don't believe that.
Yeah, I can just imagine my listeners saying, who is this guy?
Yeah, no. It's the internet's not going anywhere. Yeah. We're good. Podcast. The reason I am so excited about working in this industry right now and building a team and building a product in this space is, you know, I think we look around and like Spotify making $500 million, you know, acquisitions this year, and just the new companies and the venture money coming into the space and how quickly it's growing. Like, it's exciting for me. Like when I built my first pitch deck to go out and raise money to build a company, you know, 3.5 years ago, you would basically get laughed out of a room when you said like podcasting was going to be a thing. And then over the past couple of years, it got a lot better. And then this year it's kind of taken on a whole other form. And I really noticed it at Podcast Movement this year. It just felt like podcasting graduated from high school and that awkward like adolescent phase, and it's now like almost an adult going off to college. Like it's really felt like what we have wanted for the industry is finally starting to happen. But where it's headed, we have only scratched the surface. The whole idea that, like, well, you know, there's been articles recently about, you know, are there too many podcasts? Hmm. Are there too many blogs? Are there too many TV shows? Are there too many radio websites?
Yeah.
Too many websites? Come on. I mean, let's go back to the early 2000s, and people like Blogger was out there and LiveJournal. Hmm. And it was like, not everybody's going to have a blog. Well, guess what? Everybody had a blog. Hmm. Not everybody's going to do social media when Facebook came along, Tumblr came along. Guess what? Everybody did social media. Like, content is important, and us, I think, as humans, we we crave mediums to share our creativity, if that be through a photo or through audio or through written word. But I don't think that podcasting in general is going to continue to be just, you know, fiction storytelling and interviews. Audio is the oldest form of communication. I mean, before pictures, before written word, like, we had, you know, verbal communication. It is the most intimate, one human speaking to another human. It is the easiest to consume. I can consume audio content while I am laying in bed with my eyes closed. I can consume audio content while I'm driving a car. I can't do that with written word. I can't do that with video. So audio opens a lot of doors, plus being kind of the oldest form of communication. So I think because of that, we're quickly seeing podcasting grow in a lot of different ways and moving beyond just what we have known as podcasts to more of, like, we're just sharing spoken word on demand. So something that we're even seeing here as a company is the large amount of companies and organizations that are launching, like, private internal podcasts at their company. So if you're a company of 5, 10, 20, 30,000 employees around the globe, you know, think about a weekly podcast to where, like, the C-team, the C-suite executive team, or the CEO or the CFO can actually talk to members of the company on a weekly basis. So I think audio is going to open the door for training and for a lot of resources internally with companies. So it's really exciting to me to see, just in the last 6 months, how many proposals we have done for large corporations that are doing internal podcasts. I also think that we haven't even scratched the surface on internationalization yet. I mean, this data is old. I haven't done this recently, but I know that a year ago, that, you know, close to 80% of the podcast out there was all in, you know, English. So we haven't even begun to see what podcasts can do around the globe in different languages and as they move into different areas. Like, podcasting is exploding right now in India, and I think we're going to continue seeing this all across the globe. So where it's going to go in a lot of directions. But what's exciting is we haven't reached peak podcast, and there's not too many podcasts. Is it harder now to get your content to rise to the top? It most certainly is. But guess what? It's that same thing in the world of blogging, or the world of sharing your photography, or the world of being a YouTube celebrity. Like, content has to be good. And just because podcasting is a thing right now, not also everybody does need a podcast.
Yeah. Well, that's a fascinating insight. So, I mean, I've been watching the you know, the discussions online around internal podcasts, and I thought that is such a fantastic opportunity and must be an untapped market. But yeah, like, thinking back to my corporate days, in a company of, you know, 35,000 employees spread right around the globe in multiple countries, having something like that kind of gave people some insights into the vision and the direction and the initiatives that were happening in the company would have made an enormous difference in, you know, having people on board and having people aligned, or better understanding of, you know, why we have to do what we're being told we have to do right now.
Yes, absolutely. Mm.
All right. Well, what's the future for Simplecast then? You've kind of painted a picture for podcasting, so I'm sure you've pretty excited about where the opportunities are for Simplecast.
I mean, at the core of what we do, we are, you know, a platform for creatives to be able to have the tools to create their passion and their content, and to distribute it to the world, and to get data back to make it better and to monetize. Kind of at the core of, like, where are we headed as a company over, say, the next 6 or 12 months, we're going to be continuing a lot of deep work in analytics. And then we are preparing to release the first version, and then multiple iterations to it, around dynamic content. And when I say dynamic content, a lot of podcasters hear that and think, well, that means ads. We think dynamic content is great for ads, but it has so much more capability. So for instance, we are going to be using a lot of our data to allow dynamic audio to grow in unique ways. And I'll give a few just general examples here. But so through our fingerprinting process and through our study of like what is a unique device and what is a unique listener, imagine if you could have a different intro play for your podcast for people that had never listened to your show before.
Mm.
Or imagine that you could have a different mid-roll run host spoken for people that you know had listened to another one of your shows or another episode. So I think the opportunity for what dynamic audio can do beyond just injecting ads into a podcast is very exciting. And that's something that we are going to be using our data-centric platform and our focus on data as a company to do some very interesting things in that space. We'll definitely use it as well for creators to monetize and creators to run ads and creators to dynamically swap out their host read ads on their back catalog. You know, they won't need to bake ads in anymore, but we're going to use data to try to go a little bit deeper and do some interesting things with kind of moving us out of a world of static audio into something that can be unique for listeners. Like imagine you hearing a part of a show that is specific to you because of another show you've listened to or where in the world you live versus what I might hear on the East Coast in the US.
Hmm. That's exciting. That really is exciting because it opens up a, well, first of all, it addresses the point we were talking about earlier that, you know, the data is only as valuable as the insights you get out of it. And then, you know, being able to take action on those insights and using the data to actually drive that with intelligent systems.
Absolutely.
It kind of reminds me a little bit of, you know, the automated email sequences that are dynamic where, you know, people have clicked on this button. So the next email they get is specific to the action they've taken. So it's kind of the audio version, if you like.
Yeah, drip campaigns for audio.
Yeah. All right, well, this has been absolutely fascinating, Brad. I'm just watching the time a little bit here. We've sort of dug really deeply into podcasting and podcasting analytics in particular, but it's probably a good time to move on to the buzz, which is our innovation round.
I think probably half the people that have been listening to my voice are taking naps right now because all I did was talk about data and analytics for 40 minutes. Yeah. So.
Well, I think, you know, a lot of my audience know that when I dig into some of these topics, it's not necessarily just about what we're talking about. There's lessons in that for a lot of other things. And I think the key point here is that, you know, data, whatever data you gather in whatever it is you're doing, whether it's podcasting or whether it's analytics on websites or YouTube views or you know, who's buying your product, it's the insights that you get from that data and what it tells you and what you can do with it that is the real value in it.
Yeah.
Rather than the what I like to call vanity metrics, which it's not my term, but I think it's a great term that, you know, how many downloads do you have? Well, you know, if you can say, oh, I get 10,000 a week, that's nice. But what does that really mean?
Yeah.
Hmm. All right. Well, our buzz round's designed to help our audience, and they're primarily innovators and leaders in their field, to learn from some tips from your experience. So there's five questions I've got, and hopefully you'll give some really insightful answers. And the idea is to inspire the listener to go and do something awesome today. So first of all, what do you think the number one thing is anyone needs to do to be more innovative?
The number one thing to be more innovative. That's tough because, you know, I climb out of bed every day and we talked about this at the beginning of, you know, kind of the daydreaming portion. There's a lot of ways that I look at what I do every day and it doesn't feel innovative. And I think really that just comes from what does that word even mean? And does it mean something different to everybody? And if so, I think it's mostly about finding the way to share what matters most to you. So for me, Innovation is digging into data around audio to help podcasters. That's a very tough one for me, just because, you know, I feel innovation is different by the person, innovation is different by the industry. But I think at the end, it comes from the fact of, like, what is something that you want to change, and can you help change that?
Yeah, that's a really good point. And I think, you know, there's guests that have said, well, there's innovation and creativity. And I think the innovation part was the difference they draw was that innovation is actually taking an action on the creativity is thinking of something, but innovation is taking action. Or maybe it was the other way around, but I can't remember now. But yeah. It's like you said, it means different things to different people. But I think that taking action is important. So, you know, sharing what's important to you and helping people to get benefit from that, I think, is a really good one to take out. So what's the best thing you've done to develop new ideas or new products?
Oh, boy. I don't know if I've ever had a good idea. The best thing I have done to, that's the best thing I've done to develop new ideas or products. This probably sounds like a terrible answer, but the best thing I've probably done is fall on my face quite a bit. I have made dozens more failures than successes, and I've had hundreds more losses than I've had wins. And I think the key to making the best thing, the best podcast, the best product, the best company, is to learn from those experiences.
Yeah, I think that's a really great suggestion. And I think the key there, of course, is to actually take action. Don't wait until you develop something to perfection. Go out there and take action, figure out what works and what doesn't work, and learn from the things that didn't work.
Yeah, and that is where building the best thing or the best product comes from, is the likelihood that you're going to nail that on your first or second or third try is very slim. But having the best of something, the best thing that you can create, is going to take a lot of work and a lot of tripping and stumbling and skinning your knees at the same time.
Yeah. All right. Now, aside from Simplecast, what's a resource that's a favorite of yours that you use a lot?
In regards to
anything, really.
Oh, wow. I'm not going to lie, I've been a bit of a workaholic this past year. So the company consumes, a lot more time than I have in a day. So, a resource to me, is one, relying on staying creative, staying passionate. You know, there's a lot of times in running a business that, you know, you get into something because it excites you. But then you get into the trenches, and the next thing you know is, you know, you're not building product, or you're not getting to work directly with the creators. You're running a company. So something that I try to do that I find as a resource is I try to personally connect with as many creators still as I can. You know, being involved with our sales process and working with creators coming to our platform and staying connected to the creators. But other than that, you know, that is one resource for me of kind of resetting and kind of keeping my eye on the ball of, why am I doing this in the first place? We're not doing this to build software. We're not doing this to build a technology company. We're doing this to help people take something that they care a lot about, take their ideas, take their passion, and put it out there in the world. So staying in tune with that, staying in tune with the customers and creators is very important for me.
Well, that's a really good answer. It's a unique answer. But I think, you know, keeping the why in mind is always good advice.
Yeah, I mean the key to burnout and the key to all of that is and I share this from past experience, is forgetting the why.
Yeah.
Like, what? Why is this? Like, this thing that I've made, be it a podcast, be it whatever, when it's grown to a whole other beast than what you set out to create, and that's not to say it's not a great thing, but if you truly lose sight of the why you ever took the first step in that direction in the very first place, like, that's kind of where you kind of begin to stray from that original vision.
Hmm. All right. Now, what's the best way to keep a project on track?
Best way to keep a project on track. Having some of the best product managers in the world around me. That's tough. I mean, I could talk about that in the world of software, which, you know, I think there is no keeping projects on track when you're talking about developing software. But again, the key for me, if it be in solving a business problem, if it be in solving a software development problem, and we talked about this, my head of product and our lead PM just today, of looking at what we want to accomplish and breaking it down in the smallest bite-sized pieces as possible and taking it one piece at a time. Hmm. Like, we're going to climb that mountain and we don't know yet what we're going to do when we get to the tree line. We just know we have to start and we have to take step one and step two. It makes it a lot more difficult in the world of software development to kind of plan an outcome and know when you're going to launch something. But I think really for any project is to take that big thing and to break it down in the smallest bite-sized steps as possible. Figure out your cadence of, I accomplish the first three steps in this amount of time and we have four more steps to take, so the chances it's going to take this much longer. Projects in general, creating things, being a creative, can be overwhelming. Like, I can't wrap my head around how a author can write a novel.
Yeah.
I can't stay focused long enough to write a blog post. Mm. So there has to be a way that, you know, for me, what works, I'm sure works very different for other people. But I think how to keep a project on track, how to keep focused, it is going to have to be, for me, breaking that thing down in the smallest manageable pieces and then putting those pieces back together one at a time.
Mm. Yeah, I love a lot of things you said there. For me, I mean, when I get into a state of overwhelm, I try to take that approach and say, well, what's the next step I can take?
Right.
And breaking it down into those smaller steps, and then you've got a list and you just sort of tick off the list and don't worry too much about looking at the big thing, which is a bit overwhelming. And then once you've ticked off a bunch of things off the list, all of a sudden that big thing doesn't seem so overwhelming again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know that, you know, in like software development world, we could have one task and that is like launch dynamic audio.
Hmm.
But when you really break that down in Asana for our team, it will probably be 120 individual tasks.
Yeah.
And half of those tasks will probably have several subtasks. But the thing is, you broke it down and it might make it look like a larger mountain to climb, but it's actually not. It's a much clearer map of what you need to accomplish in what order to get to that final outcome.
Hmm. Yeah, thanks. That's great advice. Now, the last one in the buzz is, what's the number one thing you think anyone can do to differentiate themselves?
In the world of audio and podcasting or in general?
Well, I guess as creators, since...
As creators.
We're talking about, yeah.
Okay, so I think the one thing I will share as to what we can do as creators to differentiate ourselves is also our biggest stumbling block. Mm. And I think the number one thing to do is to not care. Not care if you're differentiating.
Yeah.
And just do the best damn version of what it is that you're doing. You will find your audience. And I say this to podcasters a lot and creators in general, is like, someone, if you're doing it well, someone will care about what you're doing. Someone will want to hear the words that you're saying. Does that mean that somebody out there isn't saying something different or similar and people are listening to them? No, but I think that sharing what is important to you and doing the best job of it will find the people that is the bigger differentiator too.
Hmm.
I also think that focusing on how do I differentiate can be the stumbling block and the molasses that you have to walk through that would prevent you from ever doing it. I suffer repeatedly from imposter syndrome. The idea of, like, you know, some days you get out of bed and you're like, I've got to wake up and run a company today. And some days I feel like I just kind of make it up as I go.
Yeah.
Do I feel every day like I'm differentiating? I don't. But I think if I focus on that and you think that, well, we're not differentiating, then like you're kind of, you're losing already. So I think not focusing on that and just focusing on building the best version of what it is that you want to share, if that be a podcast, if that be a picture, if that be a blog, you know, a video, a film, music, to not worry about that first. Your audience is out there, and just focus on finding the people that care what you have to say.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think that's great advice. And I like what you said right at the beginning there with, you know, don't care if you're different, because a lot of people kind of are, you know, in addition, I think the imposter syndrome is something that every entrepreneur faces. And, I certainly encounter it from time to time. But the other thing I think that every entrepreneur faces is like, if I do this, what are people going to think? And, so I'll tone that down. And, you know, that's me, but I'm going to tone it down because people might think badly about it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks for getting us through the buzz round, Brad. That was great. Now, I'm going to ask this question a little bit differently, and that's, what's the number one piece of advice you'd give to business leaders? I'm going to ask, what's the number one piece of advice you'd give to creators that perhaps are thinking of getting into podcasting or some other form of creating, but are kind of holding back for some reason?
For creators that have been holding back, I've said this before, and I spoke recently and actually shared this, and that is the fact that you have one shot at this, and kind of passion for us and connection as people is through sharing things. You are going to stumble, you are going to mess up, you're going to fail. It is going to be hard work to put something out there that people are interested in and people care enough about, but it's worth it. It is absolutely worth it. And for me and building companies, I've been entrepreneur four times, and every time afterwards I say, well, that shaved years off my life. I'm never going to do that again. But the thing is, like, it's what I derive my happiness from. Like, this is my path. This is my life. Like, this is what I love, and this is what makes me happy. So, I think kind of just shedding off all of the stigmas and personas around the creative life and work and life balance, like, none of that really matters. Like, we as people, you get one shot to do this. So why not spend that time doing something that brings you joy and brings you passion?
All right. Well, great advice. So thanks a lot, Brad. This has been really great. Where can people reach out, find out more about Simplecast, and find out more about you, reach out and perhaps even say thank you for what you've shared with us today?
Yeah, certainly. Simplecast, of course, simplecast.com. Social media, Twitter, Instagram, @Simplecast. And as for me, the best thing is probably social media. And I am Brad on Twitter and Brad on Instagram as well. So it took a lot of work to achieve that over the years, as well as being an early adopter. So the easiest way to find me is probably one of those two platforms.
Okay, we'll have links to all of that in the show notes. Yeah, I noticed that you had @Brad on those platforms, and that was pretty impressive. I thought, wow.
Yeah, one day I will share the stories behind those. So be happy to. We can do that on the next time we talk. Yeah, and then also my email is just brad@simplecast.com as well. So.
All right. Well, finally, Brad, who would you like me to chat with on a future Innova Buzz podcast, and why?
I would probably recommend, if you want to really dig into the audio and podcast space, somebody that I trust and rely on quite a bit for insights is Dan Meisner at Pacific Content. Definitely one of probably what I think is the best thought leaders in the entire audio industry. Just his insights, the way he thinks about the future of audio and how brands interact with audio. I could name a dozen people right now, but I think you know, since I am building something in the podcasting space, and we talked a lot about podcasting today, somebody like that, I would definitely talk to Dan. He is someone that I lean on frequently for advice and insights into what creators need and what companies need and what brands need.
Okay, well, we'll get an introduction to Dan from you and reach out to him and have a chat. Sounds fascinating. All right, well, thanks, Brad. Thanks for sharing your time so generously with us today. Absolutely. I've really enjoyed this and learned a lot about the difference between downloads and listens and what's really important. And I'm excited about the future of what can be done with those analytics in terms of insights and also the dynamic audio.
Yeah, I hope the technical aspects were not too nap inducing. I get a little passionate about that. So,
yeah.
This was my pleasure and my honor, and I really appreciate you having me today.
All right. Well, thanks. Yeah, and I wish you all the best for the future, and let's keep in touch.
Absolutely.
I hope you enjoyed that insightful and informative conversation with Brad and took something away from his episode. He was a little concerned that we geeked out too much on podcasting, but as I said in the intro, I think there is a lot there that is applicable, not just to podcasting, but to any creation of content or information on the internet or even in non-internet physical publications. So I'm really excited by the possibilities that are being opened up in podcasting, as we did geek out a lot about podcasting. And Brad highlighted how larger corporations are using podcasts to communicate from the top to bottom in that organization. And also, I'm really excited about the idea of dynamic content. Imagine delivering custom material in a podcast episode based on whether you're speaking with a regular listener or a first-time listener. I'd love to know what you took away from Brad's episode. Leave a comment below the blog post, which you can find at innovabiz.co/Brad Smith. That is BRADSMITH. All lowercase, all one word, innovabiz.co/Brad Smith. At that address, you'll also find contact information for getting in touch with Brad, as well as links to the Simplecast website, his social media pages, and the other resources we spoke about in today's conversation. Brad suggested that we have a conversation with Dan Meisner from Pacific Content on a future InnovaBuzz podcast. So Dan, keep an eye on your inbox for an invitation from us to the InnovaBuzz podcast, courtesy of Brad Smith. Remember to check out our Marketing Master mini class. It's at innovabiz.co/marketingmaster. It's completely free. It's accessible without even giving away your email. But most importantly, it will give you absolute clarity about your ideal client and how you can communicate with them to build and strengthen an engaging, enduring relationship. Now, if you'd like our help to go even deeper into marketing mastery, or our help with producing a podcast, then send me an email to jurgen@innovabiz.co and we'll set up a quick call just to get to know one another. No obligations and nothing to sell, just a call to have a chat and a virtual coffee perhaps. Tune in again next week. We've got some more fantastic guests lined up. As always, I'm excited to speak to these wonderful guests that come on the InnovaBuzz podcast. And next week, we've got Scott Perry from Creative on Purpose. And we have Sonia McDonald, who's an executive coach and a keynote speaker. Stay connected with us by subscribing to the InnovaBuzz podcast at innovabuzz.com/subscribe. innovabuzz.com/subscribe. Make sure you never miss another episode. It would also mean a lot to me if you leave us a review, because what you think matters. I'd love to hear your thoughts, your ideas, your suggestions, or questions you have, so go ahead and share them in the comments below the blog post for this episode. Until next time, I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz. Remember, be awesome and keep innovating.